first summarize what we've done over the last couple of weeks. We've essentially seen that there are two fundamental, so far we've seen two fundamental shittot with regard to tzniut, and we're talking in particular tzniut that has to do with davening. There's how much the halacha states that not only is it
Take two and call me in the morning.
That's my line.
Thank you.
It's nice of you all to give up the classic debate to come in here. What I wanted to say was that essentially what we've seen is that the halacha, when it comes to davening, the halacha states that biblically it's forbidden to daven in the presence when one is totally naked, whether you're totally naked, or when somebody else is naked, and as the genitals are exposed. That's biblical. And that learned from Noyevacha Erbati. The vow that is when you're setting up your machane shina, that is when you're davening and you're trying to invoke God's presence, you can't have something that's unseemly, and then the halacha learns Erbati. The vow refers to the genitals. However, rabbinically, it's also forbidden for one to daven when one is sexually distracted. We saw that the halacha in regard to women, we saw that at the end of last week's year. When it comes to women, the halacha says that the women generally don't become sexually distracted simply by fantasy, by some modest exposure, which not only by clear exposure, but if there's no sexual distraction, if a man is slightly exposed, his arms or legs are showing, we don't assume right off the bat that the man will be the woman will be sexually aroused. If she is sexually distracted, then it's a halakhic problem. There's no question about it. You can't job it, can't think about Hashem when you're sexually distracted. However, when it comes to men, since the halakha maintains that with men there's a much more of a problem of fantasizing, much more a problem of sexual distraction, the halakha was concerned that if there's something is exposed which might lead sexual distraction, then it's forbidden for him to daven at that point. And the Gemara then, Brachot, sort of gives us a list of things that are forbidden. Gemara gives tefach be'sheva, that is a part of a body that's normally covered, it becomes unexposed. Seir be'sheva, kol be'sheva, the hair that's normally covered. Kol, or voice, the halacha understands the singing voice. Okay, shok, which we'll learn, thigh is exposed. Then the halacha says that a man is forbidden, even the husband who's permitted to halachically fantasize about his wife, when it comes to prayer, you can't. You can't daven when you're having thoughts that would distract you from your daven. Then we saw the Mishnah Berurah, who states that the things that are stated in the Gemara Brachot are absolutes. That is, when the Gemara says Seir b'sheva, Shok b'sheva, Kol b'sheva, these are absolutes. That is, when the Halacha states that these things are not examples of sexual distraction, but these things, they may have been sexually distracting from the Gemara, but de facto, this is the Halacha is now codified, these things are forbidden. Which means that if women walk around now more exposed, and the menfolk in the community perhaps are not sexually distracted by a woman's singing voice, or with their hair uncovered, maybe with their hair uncovered. That's irrelevant, says the Mishnah Berurah. Since the halacha came along and codified these things as erva, rabbinically, as sexually distracting, they are de jure, sexually distracting things. By law, they're sexually distracting. Even though de facto, in fact, they may not be sexually distracting. Now, look, it's come along and codified. And this is now what we call the absolute shita, it's named. There is, however, another view that we saw. Another view, which is represented by a whole variety of Rishonim, and we went through them, the Mordechai, the Obadiah, the Rabbi Hanan, the Maimonides. We even saw it in the Orach HaShulchan, which is a more modern a codification of Jewish law in the 1800s, which maintains that when it comes to the laws of Kriyat Shema, what's of importance is not whether the halacha forbade it. The halacha, what's important is whether it is de facto sexually distracting. Therefore, they said, if men are used to seeing it, are used to hearing it, and it's no longer sexual distraction, then it's not forbidden. And to use the language, they use a concept called regilut. Regilut means you're used to it. It's no longer de facto sexually distracting. As an example, says the Aruch HaShulchan, he was now living in the 1800s, and we're going to see a variety of responses. Let me explain to you that in the 1800s, women were beginning to uncover their hair, not only in Jewish society, but in the general society. It was very common for women, even up through the late 1700s, to marry women, cover their hair. They wouldn't walk out on the street with their hair uncovered. Beginning with the end of the 1700s, and moving into the 1800s, the women of Europe in general, and Jewish women in Europe also, were beginning to uncover their hair. So the problem of uncovering your hair was a major problem in the Jewish community, and that's where the issue really comes to the fore. So the Aruch HaShulchan, writing his code in the middle 1800s, he says, I want you to know that it's forbidden for a woman to uncover her hair. It's forbidden. But what can I do? All these women go around with their hair uncovered. Therefore, it's no longer a problem because men are used to it. There's a regilut. The men are used to it, and therefore it's not a problem. This is a direct opposition to the view of the Mishnah Berurah, right? Where the Mishnah Berurah says, no, women acting immodestly can't change the halacha. The halacha states it's usur. You can't come, there's no such thing as, says the Mishnah Berurah, yeah, there is a concept called relative tzniut. That's beyond the lines of the halacha. That is, the halacha says from the elbows up is asur, so it depends on the community. If, you know, if the community covers down to the wrist, in this area, yeah, that's relative tzniut. If the halacha says from the knee down, knee up is a problem of shoke, then from the knee down, depends on what they do, that's going to be relative. But there's certain areas that are absolute, that you can't play. Aruch HaShulchan says not, at least he's talking about hair. He says it by hair. He says, no, by hair, even though a married woman is obligated to cover hair, if the women in that community go around with their hair exposed, they're no good nicks. But what can I do? He says, it's no longer sexual distraction. The men are used to it. There's a regilut. Now, when we had this discussion already at the end, as the shiur went on, there were several people who sort of felt where I was trying to move with this. And already, Ms. Safran, who's not here today, unfortunately, said to me, but that only means, Arya, that only means that after the fact, if women uncover their hair, it's not sexually distracting, therefore, if women only go around with their sleeves up to here instead of up to here, that's not a problem for Kriyat Shema because you're used to it. It doesn't give you license to go ahead and do it. It just means, de facto, it's not sexually distracting, and therefore, it's assumed. Therefore, since it's not that, but as far as the laws of tzniut, they still require you to cover your elbow, go down to the elbow, or go down to your knee. If women were to go walk around with mini skirts, you mean to tell me now it's halachically permissible to go around with mini skirts? That's not what the Aruch HaShulchan said. He only said, even though there are no good nicks going out, but it's essentially not distracting. So after the fact, or b'diavad, we don't view it as halachically problematic as far as the contravening the fulfillment of the mitzvah of Kriyat Shema. That's not going to stand in the way of Kriyat Shema, because de facto it's not such a distraction. Nobody says, go ahead, it's mutter. So that was the sort of, that point was raised, and I said, all right, be patient. But if we think about it for a minute, the position, it's not very far to go to a position which gives you a totally relative concept of tzmius. This shita would hold that the general concept of tzmius, the general requirement for a woman to dress modestly, to not be sexually distracting, stems from the de facto issue of whether something is sexually distracting. I'd be happy to repeat it. You're not the only one. The one could argue, and I'm going to show you some responses that actually do argue that way, against a great deal of resistance, but they do say it, that there is, that the concept of tzniut is totally relative. That is, and let me just state it a little differently. When the Gemara came along and said, Seir b'isha erva, kol b'isha erva, shok b'isha erva, what was the Gemara doing? The Mishnah Berurah argues the Torah with the halacha was codified that which is de jure, by law, sexually distracting. And now the halacha has effectively created its own reality. It's irrelevant whether it's, in fact, sexual distraction. Chazal came along and said, that's usher. That we've declared is sexually distracting. One has the rules of that which is sexually distracting. But this other school would argue, that's yotza. What Chazal were forbidding was sexual distraction. In Kriyat Shema, because it distracts you from meeting with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. In general life, because it's sexually distracting and we don't want our woman to walk around being sexually distracted. So the Chazal, at their time, gave us examples of that which is sexually distracting. It was the singing voice, it was a married woman's hair, it was the thigh, because that was normally covered. The Chazal are giving you examples. But suppose men are used to it. Suppose in that community, women walk with their hair uncovered. Let's say women sing, women wear their sleeves halfway down, not all the way down. And it's no longer for a man to see a woman's elbow, a little bit above, is that sexually distracting? Can a woman dress that way? This school would say yes, because what is forbidden is to dress in a fashion that's sexually distracting. Now it's going to get us into a lot of problematics. I mean, how do you enforce something? How do you teach something? How do you explain it? And we'll take examples, we'll talk about what the school maintains. But this school maintains what Chazal were forbidding is a mode of dress, which is sexually distracting. Now, hair.
Could you be very covered up and be very sexually distracted?
That is clearly forbidden. That is to be covered from head to toe and wear tight, tight clothing. It's clear. Everybody agrees that that's a lot. Wearing lycra bodysuits, halachic mikvah. That's right. I'm going to tell you, women who walk around with these lycra stocking pants, or whatever they call it, with skirts, which is very, very modern, it's a problem. It's form-fitting.
But today, anything goes on the street.
Before you get on, let me explain to you what you're asking. You're saying, Ari, if you hold absolute sneal, then everything's permitted. You mean to tell me what?
Relative,
everything's permitted. That's not so. Because what is the ultimate criteria? Sexually distracted or not sexually distracted?
But it defines them. But then you can say it defines.
I don't know if everybody remembers the answer, I remember that when we were growing up, there was this band commercial, the mature male and mature female. You don't remember that. You're too young. The answer is, you gotta be very mature about it. I agree with you. This school in practice is not at all trivial. A woman has to look herself in the mirror and say, am I sexually distracted?
But
and there's a fundamental difference between looking good and looking good.
But then you're going to say, there's women's woman, what's about the woman's But I, then you can say, mention walk the streets, actually, because of what is going on.
Well, look, even the absolute sheet has that, certainly has that problem, but Moshe acts that way. I mean, if you look at those who are Hasidim who are certain, and I suggest you watch, they walk with their eyes down. They walk the streets with their eyes down. So they don't trip. They don't look around. Their eyes don't watch the
It's a question of degrees. There are societies that if you go with a flesh-colored stocking, you are considered your legs are naked.
Flesh-colored, if it's opaque, you're right, but that would be a sort of a Marathian concept. If it's flesh-colored but opaque, so you're not seeing the actual flesh.
That's why they wear black stockings.
That's why they wear black stockings. That is correct. I agree. But that's more of a Marie Diamond than the technicality of Okay, yes.
Yeah, but even the most relative school, you still have a problem with hair. Isn't there a separate...
Good. Excellent. You're right. But that problem is... We'll see this one, because that's very common. You're right on the money. And we're going to deal with hair differently. Because hair... would seemingly have a separate obligation. That is, whether hair is sexually distracting or not is one issue, and the issue of whether a woman is obligated to cover her hair is a separate issue. And we'll deal with that, okay? And we will discuss some minority opinions who will deal with that particular problem. In fact, we're going to see a tshuva today that's going to struggle with the problem. All I want to demonstrate, you're right on, and then we'll talk about that. All I want to demonstrate at this moment is that there are indeed tshuvot that maintain that opinion. I would say in the modern halakha, I'll be a name dropper, talk about poskim who walk a fine line, who essentially are in the absolute school, in the relative school, okay, in the sense of sniffle performance, but they're more machmir in the relative school. We'll talk about what this means. We haven't gotten, but I just want to establish that such a school exists, okay, that nobody will say, from here off the wall, right? Now, the example in the literature is Seder. And we'll see exactly that they deal with the problem, but we're gonna study Seder from the Seder v'Isha'erva problem, which is equivalent to Shulchan, and then the response will be, but they're no good nicks. But the question is, we'll see the discussion around it, and we'll see that there'll be several levels, and the issue will be discussed from these different levels, okay? Okay, one issue we're going to see on this particular page, this starts off, Sefer Chukei HaNashim. Okay, now, in this discussion is probably going to go on for about 2 weeks. Let me apologize in advance. We're going to spend time reading through Tshuvot. Okay, we're going to be spending time reading this Tshuva, which will take us a while. Okay, this is an experiment. I've never done this before. I've given the shiurim in different versions before. I've never discussed these tshuvot. We'll see how it goes and how many of you I put to sleep. But I think it's important to see the sources and the struggle inside, because it makes, my father would always say, otiyot machkimos, the letters themselves make you smart. See it inside, see how the word is phrased. It comes from a book called Sefer Chukei HaNashim from Rav Yosef Chaim, who's the Ben Ishchai. The Ben Ishchai was a very, very popular Rav in the Sephardic countries. I think he's from Morocco. I apologize. I don't remember all his details, but he was extremely, extremely well received. He wrote a book called Chukei HaNashim, which deals with all sorts of halachot that are relative. What if you can? On the other side. He was born, if I'm not mistaken, in 1835. I just looked up his dates before 1835, in the 1800s. And again, you'll see the 1800s is the period where the hair problem starts coming in the Jewish community. Not that it was such a problem in the Arabic countries, in Turkey, but Turkey, of all the countries, was the one that was most European. Europeans were beginning to have their influence felt in these Arab countries. Okay.
Just Turkey was very secular.
What?
Turkey was secular.
Secular. Well, but that was more than this movement. I don't know if it was in 1800s. Okay. Let's look. We're not going to go through the whole thing. I just want to want you to look down. Let's just stick to the second paragraph. V'chein ha'nashim yishmochem ha'rachum. Women too, may the merciful guard you. Hatzniut ma'od nechutza l'isha mikol ha'tzdadim mibefnim ubechutz. One has to be modest both externally and internally. T'chila b'ofen malbusheh, b'ofata, how she dresses and how she looks. She's got to look organized according to the custom. She's not allowed to get dressed in any form or fashion which shows some of her flesh. And that any of her flesh should show. Her face, her neck, and her hands. The shave v'red, kulam atufim, the rest of the body should be totally covered. V'habitu haneshim al anshei Europa. Look, women, on the women of Europe. You have to understand, they were considered the sophisticated ones, the elegant ones. Look how they dress, he says. Min hagam lo lisatem b'nezarim. They don't hide in front of foreigners. U'b'chol zot. Mabusheyem esudarim. They dress properly. Lo mitgale migufam. They're not exposed. Their face and their neck. Kapotideim v'rosham, and their hair. And their head. Now he says, V'emet nachon megule saram. It is correct that their hair is uncovered. U'lefi adin shalanu asur davar. And according to us, that would be improper. Asur. Abo yeshlam ezet atzlut. But they have some halakhic apology. They have an apology. What are they? How do they justify? How do the Jewish European women dress? Justify how they dress? Ki omrim lo nitkasheva minagel ezel kol shotem. This custom of covering their hair, this wont of covering their hair, has not been accepted by all their women. Nivnot umatam v'chutz umatam by their nation, meaning Jewish, v'chutz and outside their nation. Naseh giluy ha'se'ar. Their hair is, their covering of their hair, kamo gilui pneihem v'kapot yudeihem. That's how they walk around. It's like, it's not sexually distracting, it's like the palms of their hands and their face. Ve'ino dovem hiru etzal ha'anashim. Doesn't cause sexual distraction. V'ma v'etinem as the men look. And he goes out, v'chein asul bosh ma'am kushtaki asul etzik lomim. So what is he saying? How he's recording, now remember he's a Sephardic folk saver, and he's recording what the justification was in the Ashkenazic communities and the European communities of what they did. And you see the rationale. The rationale is simple, that's the way everybody dresses, and it's not sexually distracting. That's all the rationale. Now he doesn't accept it, but he's recording what was the halakhic rationale that was given at the time. Okay, just for comparison, let me just go over to the left-hand side, next to the last paragraph. Got it? The last paragraph. When a woman goes out of the house, taniach kisu apana, she wears a veil on her face. Kisu apana. Utchase ad asher tazol mekavachi, and when she leaves out, she wears it until she goes back home. But when she sees something that she wants, really wants to see clearly, right? She removes this covers veil, and she leaves a covering which has big holes. It means it seems that there were several coverings here. So she can look at easily. This action is lacking. It's childish. It's a cause. But anyway, this what he's describing now is what we'll come back to. It's called the Ridid. A Ridid was a face veil. And not only did the woman cover her hair, but she actually covered her whole face with a face veil. And you see, he's talking about that it goes, well, this was true in the middle of the 1800s, at least in the Arab countries. Yeah, it's true till today. Today, right. Have a picture
we'll
talk about.
In the Turkey.
Okay, that's
true.
Yeah.
When my mother came, evidently follow this because nobody wore shuffle.
So they kept cutting their hair at all?
Sure. Nobody covered their hair.
By the early 1900s, it was very rare.
I mean, not only my mother, but everybody.
Yes, I'm sure, that's true. I mean, yes, it was very widespread. Women, some married women, some didn't cover their hair. All I can tell you is that was essentially true through the 1960s. Well, the family was about 100 years that married women, as a general rule, Orthodox married women, as a general rule, were not coming out. If they did, it was European or fashion. I mean, I didn't say that they didn't do it in Buddhist circles, but it was very, very common. Somewhere along in the 1960s, I think it was more with the learning. The women were becoming much more educated, and with the education came. These were women who took it upon themselves. The pressure was against it. That is, I know because my wife, right, who grew up in this period, was one of the first of her friends to cover her hair. And it was not that common. And a lot of women in midlife began covering their hair. They decided they felt it was proper. They studied the book of old. And they started, in the middle of the 60s, there was a move back towards covering their hair. And I would say, as you move in the modern period, let's say now in the 90s, I would say that it's a very, very large percentage of women getting down the side.
In England, I think
so.
This is very unusual.
Excuse me?
In England,
sure, but I'm sure it's not true now.
Sure.
Yeah. Find a celibation. Nothing's in the celibation.
A little story.
But we have to talk about it. It's not so trivial. See, if you tell me that the masses didn't cover their hair, that's one thing. You tell me Rebbetzins, very highly, educated rabbinic families didn't cover their hair. And these are women who, kept halacha to the T and everything. Not to cover their hair, there had been some halachic basis. It was not an act of rebellion in these women. I mean, I can understand, if your mother didn't cover your hair, or your grandmother didn't cover your hair, and you're raising that, it wasn't an issue with you. But if you now have, women are extremely halachically educated, and we'll have to talk about what is it. Maybe a minority opinion. But you have to understand that in halacha, when we talked about women not davening, I mentioned that as long as there is some fundamental, solid source, even if it's a minority opinion, that holds that something does or doesn't have to be done, the rabbis of the community don't have to get up and holler and scream. I mean, they can get up and try to educate, but they don't have to get up and scream because the woman would say, what do you leave me alone? I'm relying on this source. It's a good source. It's a good shita. It's not a... So it changes. There has to have been some halachic source, some halachic approach to the deal with the question that you raised. The Gemara says, don't hide the heat. How are you going to get around it? What are you going to do with it?
There was a certain pressure. Do you know that there were towns, younger guys, also in Hungary, also in Germany. I don't know about Austria, though. Geographically, Austria was closer. That's another story. Austria was somehow Liechtenstein. But, say, in Hungary, certain towns, certain communities, if the woman didn't cover her hair, the husband didn't get an aria.
It was a major cause celebrity. Oh, no, it was a major issue. In the 1800s, early 1900s, it was a major, major issue. Okay, turn the page. And we're now going to see responses written at around the same time. Yes?
The first paragraph is this. Yeah. I mean, that's, we know that as an old woman, she wasn't created from the shoulders, she wouldn't be disciplined. But, it just puts a very different spin on the ending.
The
famous one is that she was created from the ribs, so she'd stand by his side.
a very different spin.
That's a modern, that's a modern. Well, each time in its own spin, you know. But you're more than willing to read the whole section. It's a very interesting timepiece, but I have a goal. Yeah, very good.
It's funny, it's a no, you know, like.
Okay, now, what we have here is a responsa called by Yeshev Yosef. And the issue is, the Yeshev Yosef was written by Rav Yosef Nissim Burla. Actually, the book was, he lived again in the middle, in the 1800s. The book was actually published by his two sons in 1905 in Jerusalem. But he was a scholar of great repute in the 1800s. But the tshuva that is of interest is not his tshuva, but the tshuva of Rav Matatio Tzomani, who was underlined there, who wrote a tshuva not to him, wrote a shaila not to him, but wrote a tshuva to, you see the name Yitzhak Yisrael? And he wrote his name, actually it appears also Rafael Yitzhak, and obviously added the name Rafael because he was ill. He wrote it to, what the situation about it. Rabbi Matityahu Tzumani wrote a tshuva to his relative, Rabbi Yitzhak Yisrael, who was considered, I don't know who he is, I don't know anything about his biography, but he was considered one of the scholars of the generation. Rabbi Yitzhak Tzumani, because of his personal, even because of his illness, or because of personal issues, couldn't respond to the tshuva, to this question, and he handed over to his Talmud, Rabbi Yisrael Nissim Burla, to write a response. And there was a give and take of three letters of whole correspondence. Unfortunately, we don't have the whole tshuva, the whole letters of Rav Matityahu Tzumani. We only have selections of it. And what I've done is I've pieced together, first of all, I have to apologize for the quality of the photocopy. It's something I got from the Harvard Library. It's not as if I can go back and get it again so easily. So it was in my files from the Harvard Library. But it's a highly cited, this give and take, back and forth, is highly cited. And let's read the She'ilah, okay? Now this is not just the She'ilah, this is actually a discussion. And after the give and take, back and forth, there's a three, that Tzumani makes a statement, which sounds like a question, but it's really a psak. This was his psak. And then he gets attacked by Rabbi Burla, and he comes back and he defends it. He gets attacked again and defends it. Goes back and forth three times. Anyway, let's look at where it says Sheila. Okay, you see in the section, the first column, it says Sheila. Sheila. B'nashim shabau me'eretz tugrama li'ir kodesh Bucharest. Bucharest, I guess that's right. Okay, so they came from where? From Turkey to Romania. Umeaz b'iram hayu mechasot se'ar roshan. Since when they were in Turkey, they covered their hair. V'kasher bo sham b'rov hayamim shinu malbusheyem v'gam sar mehem mechasot roshan. When they came to Bucharest, which was much more European, they started dressing like the European women, which involved what? Changing their garb a little bit, they uncovered their hair. Uber Hashem, Pulot, Yotzot, Lashuk, the Pulot, Rosh, the Koba Yeshua of Hashem, Minhaga Makom, and they wore, I don't know exactly this Koba Yeshua of Hashem, but it was, their hair was uncovered, and there was their hair completely uncovered in the Shem. But often, Shekol Hanashim Shebeir, Nasei Ir Shekula Hashem Pulot. Until now, the women, all the women, in that community, walk around with their hair uncovered. Now go back to the second column, towards the top. Kichen hen benot areleim b'ofen shalom nishar kichen hu benot areleim, because that's how the non-Jewish women. They just mimic what the non-Jewish women did in that community. B'ofen shalom nishar kiim echad me'ir hu beiz min mishpacha, there's maybe one in a city, maybe two in a whole family, shalosh shinu min aga ir shiyatzu misham, who did not maintain the original custom of their Turkish customs, which was to cover their hair. Ve'al zeh shalu ha'ninashim. And now these women are asking, in kol ha'nashim ha'chol pu'at rosh, if all the women are walking with their hair uncovered, lama nigared gam anachnu, we're going to the fourth line on the second column, lama nigared gam anachnu mehen, why should we be any worse than them? V'ilagun lavno, they'll make fun of us, halalu, niglim v'anu nitzim. The day, now what happens is, these women from Turkey are now coming to this community in Bucharest, which are all the women walking over there exposed, and they're going to be made a laughing stock of, that's what they claim, because they, everybody else, all the other Jewish women walk with their hair uncovered, and they're working their hair uncovered. Now, this is their argument, but this is not their argument, actually. This was Rav Shmuel's argument. Im mishum seyar v'yishe'erva, you're going to argue to me against me. Seyar v'yishe'erva, that a woman's got to cover her hair because it's sexually distracting. Hatina, that's okay, but makom shedakan v'chasov saran, where they normally were cover their hair. V'ata lochem, that's no longer true in this place. שכבר הוגלו לראות בסערן של נשים, ואין יצרה שולט כראות פניה, ואין יצרה שולט. The wicked, the evil impulse doesn't rule here because I'm used to it. כראות פניה וידיו רגליה. Just like their hands, their face, their feet, which nobody thinks twice about. על כן דינה כבוי, they're asking what should הלכה בי, אני נשי. להורות להן את הדרך אשר תלכנה בה על פי דין. They're asking what the halacha should be, according to Din Torah, Torotinu HaKdosha. Okay, that's what they want to know, what the halacha should be, according to the Torah. Now, Harab Tsumani, who was the rabbi in that city of Bucharest, wrote, and this is based, and we'll see other things in what he said, look, we have a response, tshuva from We have a tshuva from that women are allowed, brought children up, but women are allowed to show the hair, say shiotzim chutzitzimta. The hair that comes, women wore a net, and the hair that came from the back of the neck or on the side, they're allowed to show. And the question was, why are they allowed to show that? So they brought it, because men of the community are used to seeing it. They can't get gather all together. That's the hair that comes out, and that's all right. It's perfectly all right to show it. So you see, he says, that even though hair sayer b'sheir, hair that is asur, nevertheless, this hair, which is everybody's used to seeing, is permissible. So you see, he says, that regilut helps l'chatchila. Because the halacha says that these women are allowed to show the sideburns in the back of their neck, which they normally used to see. Okay, let's look inside. We'll see where Rav Tsumani's argument. This is from Simon Bet, in the second tshuva, which goes as follows. Can you see where the big letters?
Simon Bet,
but go down a little bit, because this is Rav Brillo is not quoting a part of the response back and forth. It's very, very complicated, kind of confusing himself. Okay, you see where it says the big letter Moda Rabba La'oraita? Okay,
yes.
He wanted to make the following notification. V'zeh l'shono, ki mi'olam lo'ota alibo, he never thought, lahate l'chol ha'nashim hadarod b'arei Turkiya. He never thought of permitting the woman who still live in Turkey. The Havadai Popsod Gedya given the low revealer Baruch. Tsumani never had the Havan, he never had the thought that it would be permissible for the women in Turkey, where they walk with their hair uncovered, to walk with their hair uncovered. That he never said. The Chol Kavanati, says of Tsumani, the Psakamaz, Hein Haita Lahalitz Ba'ara Nashim Hadarot Ba'arei Edom, but to rather to live in the Arei Edom, which is a euphemism for Arei Edom, is a euphemism for Rome, but he means in the European countries. Sheparzu, where the Roman Empire versus the Turkish Empire. Sheparzu gedel mize kama shanim, who acted immodestly many, many years. V'nase kula il gidola shekula rashay megulot. It's now become a city where all the women walk around there and cover. Al eile zirafti amati lahalitz badeo, I wanted to find favor to argue on their behalf. The lo kami misur, that they're not doing anything that's usur. Me'achar shezeh kama shanim shehugalu ha'anashim lirot b'saran shel nashim lo tagid libayu, therefore since the men are used to seeing their hair uncovered, lo tagid libayu, their heart is not distracted. Kirot paneim yedem ragleim. V'leka lamechash mishum erva davar, is therefore it's not considered sexually distracting. Al der ma shekatab arashbazal, hevio abed yotzev zal, besimen ayin hei, בחלק אור החיים, גבי שיער שחוט לצמתם, ויוסוד, like the hair that comes out behind the net that contains the hair. ויוסוד זה, בניתי עליה, דייק ואמרתי, להציר נמי להני נשתי, הבאות הינה מגולות ראש, מחוסות ראש, שיכולות לגלות ראשיהם במקום שהלכו לשם. ושמחתי על מה שתשובה הגמרא משקר ז"ל, סימן המלאב. אוקיי, let's just stop. What are you saying? Look, the Gemara Moshakra says the women are allowed to walk with their hair uncovered, at least in their sideburns, that's not going to happen, because men are more weird. But now that these women are walking, the whole city walks with their hair uncovered. So that's also not such a distraction. Distracting. It's very clear that Rav Tzumani is of the opinion that Regilut, the fact that everybody does it, changes the halacha. It's no longer the fact of sexually distracting, it's a halacha problem. The woman can dress them, walk that way. Now, there is still the problem that you raised, which was the question of coming here. Now, let me just mention very, very briefly, and I'll come back to a little bit later because I have to document it, that he actually talks about it, and I don't want to talk about it at great length. He actually hints to it. And he demonstrates that when the Gemara says Doraita, Gemara means it's a minag that's mentioned in the Torah. It's a minag Doraita. We'll develop this a little bit more. But not that the Torah ordained that a woman cover her hair. The Torah merely records that the custom of the women at the time of the Torah was to cover their hair. Now that has all sorts of what? And we'll see other Poskim will hold that way. Now this is clearly a minority opinion because there are two problems here. One is the problem of sexual distraction. The other one is the problem of the obligation of the woman to cover her hair. He wants to go ahead and permit the women to uncover their hair. So he's got to deal with both issues. So on the issue of the Seir B'Sheirva, he says, well, if the women are walking around there uncovered, it's not sexually distracting, it's not a problem. As far as the woman's obligation to cover her hair, he says, that's a custom, but the customs no longer exist anymore. It's true, it's a custom mentioned in the Torah. We'll have to see it in the word. We'll have to struggle the words, and that we'll do in a couple of shiurim. We'll have to see, but the fact of the matter is, customs change. And the time of the Gemara, the 400s, you know, 300s of common era, 1500 years later, women were coming, right? Doing something. So the custom disappeared. There are a lot of cases of customs disappeared. A lot of customs in the Chutzpah they lived, and like that the Gemara mentions and codifies, and we don't have it. Okay.
Do you have any other
questions? For what? Well, yeah, we have, that was on the Rishonim last week. We talked, last week the Rishonim said that Rigilut helps, doesn't, that many Rishonim help, that Rigilut doesn't prevent you from fulfilling an obligation of Kriyat Shema. The question is, he's now taking it one step further. He says, well, if you're Ragil, it's not forbidden. That's the point here.
I'm saying, talking Sneot,
yes. The Levush talks about one of the common places that it's talked about, and we'll talk a little more when we deal with the Mechitza at great length. That is, for instance, do you need Mechitza Chabbat? Do you need Mechitza at a wedding? Those type of quite issues. And one of the classic poskim states that at the Shemar Brachot you say Brachot Leganusha Simcha b'mono v'shachana mishulot tovachin. One of the classic poskim say you can't say Shasimcha b'mono when men and women are sitting together, because that's not a divine simcha. There's no joy in God's heavenly palace when men and women are sitting together with a sexual distraction. So writes Levush. Levush is in the late 1500s. He writes, nowadays, it's not a problem. The men are used to some of the sensations. So it's clear there's awareness of mixing of a beginning of the 1500s, certainly in parts of Italy and the like, where society was much more open, much more mixed, that there was an awareness that there is a concept of rigilut as far as sexual distraction is concerned. Okay. And that is one of the major bones of contention between what we call modern orthodoxy and Aguda. And there's an interesting battle going on right now in the Jewish Observer, between Lawrence Reisman and Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin about this whole issue of an open society. They haven't framed it that way, but that's really the issue. Rabbi Yehuda Herzl Henkin gave a whole talk about how this concept of regilut works in a mixed society, and Reisman, who's representing the standard Aguda position, has resisted it, arguing back and forth. So far, there's been an article a letter back. Reisman was the gentleman who wrote the article about the Women's Feminist Conference. And Henkin, who spoke at that conference, wrote back a letter saying he misunderstood him, and Reisman wrote back a letter, and I know Henkin's writing back a letter. See, they don't speak to each other, but they don't speak to me. And I'm in email correspondence with both of them at the time, so I know this is going on. And this is the issue. This is really one of the fundamental issues. And it's one of the fundamental issues in co-education. What the halakhic attitude should be towards co-education. Because it's clear on the books co-education is for what. But the question is whether this issue of regilut plays into this particular issue. Okay, so it's a very fundamental issue in these things. All right. Okay, let me just now, I'd like you to read one of the responses, and I'm not being really completely fair to Rav Burla, who's responding to Morani. Okay, Rav Burla essentially goes into a lengthy attack on, again, three responses worth of an attack on Rav Burla. He goes in to point out that this psak, that the hair beyond on the sideburns and the hair that comes down the neck that is not attached, that is halacha. It's not obvious that everybody used the maramel shaka. He says in Turkey we didn't do it. They didn't walk around. They covered everything up. They didn't hold that way. He says, but even according to the poskim, who hold not the maramel shaka, then it's all right. Okay, we're in the first line. The af legabei nashim acherot nemar. The saran shemichut v'tzimtam, kivin de regila. We're on the third line. Lo tiv de libayas. And since so men are used to singing, they are they're not considered sexually distracted. Kamoshe biharav, just as the Ramah brought. The Ramah shaker zal umizeh olalati. And based on this, Rav Matityahu Tzurmani wanted to be matir the nashim abaot. The niigei isur b'sevot shemichut v'tzimtam b'makoman. But they come from a place where it's a forbidden to expose their hair. Two places where the women expose their hair. But it seems to me that just what is Ramashakra? Ramashakra said that if a woman comes to a doesn't cover her hair, if a woman covers it completely, and she comes to a city where the women show the hair. So the Ram Shaker, you're allowed to do it. The woman's allowed to show because it's not because the men of that community are used to it. That's what the Maramal Shaker says.
But I think if someone comes to the city where they don't, then she would be distracting, I think, in relation to anyone.
No man knows where she
because she stands out, so something.
Why she stands out? Oh, because she's covered?
Because she's covered as opposed to a woman or not.
No, that's
okay. What?
I doubt that.
Well, if I see something unusual, that
okay.
Okay,
I don't think so. No, I don't think that the de facto is correct.
Okay.
But mikomakom, let's go now on the sixth line. Mikomakom naniu dati niveh. It would seem to me, the aim lilmod mizeh. You can't learn from this where you're talking about tzimta, the hair, these little bits of hair. Mi lahate gam la nashim abo mi makom shenagu iso purei rosh. That they come to a person, a place where they don't cover, they don't show their hair at all. It's usher to be cover their hair. To a makom shenagu bo heter, והיינו תאמה דאין לנו להשוות דין צייר שמחוץ לציטן דיסוריינו, the second one, the sayer mishum, sayer b'isha, by the hair that comes out of the tzomet or the sideburns, that's the only problem with the sayer b'isha ever. And that I admit that you're right. That sexual, that de facto, it's all right. The gabayan, as far as men are concerned, the kibin, the regila, since they're used to it, it's not a problem. And we shumach yitir, that's why the Rama Shakta permitted. Aber Ruhe, Rosh, bitte, what completely uncovered? Die Surai Mishum Tzniut in Hashim, Vazara Shamanu Mitana Devei Rabbi Yishmael, and that there's the Gemara brings from the Tana, from the house of Yishmael, Shalo Yatzlo Yetzu Pruei Rosh, Vafilu De'eni Surin Midorai, even if I would admit to you that there's no biblical prohibition, even though it says biblical, but it doesn't really mean biblical, Vaf Irigile, even if it's, they're used to it, aims are there, it's new, it's not the proper way women should dress, but taninan teitzei shelo biktuba mishum dativi, she's got to go out because of dativi. Let's stop here. Let me just point out to you that even Rav Berlo admits that there is a concept of relative tzniut, and he says, yeah, that's the reason why the tzimtan hair is mutter. But he says, the law can permit completely uncovered, that no Jewish woman can't dress that way. He's got a problem. He wants to argue that this obligation, whatever it is, biblical custom requires women to cover their hair, and you can't simply undo it by the wave of the hand. And he therefore says it's us. But even he admits that there's a concept of relevance new by these issues. Okay, so let me just. I think that I have documented to some extent. That there really is a whole series, there's a group of poskim, legitimate poskim, who maintain that what you're used to is mutter. There's not such a distracting. But you have to be careful. It doesn't mean, okay, one of the first questions I get right away is, that means you can go mix swimming. No, you can't. You have to be objective. You have to ask me, is it such a distracting or not such a distracting? And body exposure, generally considered sexually distracting. Unless you have an objective reason to say it. It's not. Okay? Now, yes?
It's a very powerful symbol. For example, it's leaving the women alone for a moment. It was a very peculiar sight for everybody who didn't see it before, that the chief rabbi of Romania walked around whenever he was dressed in full regalia with a huge Mogendovit hanging on his neck. Why? Because he was pressured into it. The Pope, that is the name of, that's not a Pope, this is the Greek Orthodox brothers, and they all carry a cross. You are representing the Jewish community. How do I know that you are representing? What is your sign? Your sign is the Mogen Dovid. So he was more or less pressured into it, and he was million times seen on television and in photos, etc. Appearing, I don't know, at which occasion, ceremonial occasion, with a huge, but of size, of Mogen Dovid hanging on his neck.
Right.
Because the surrounding press.
Okay, now, what we're going to do now is take out this. We'll spend another few more minutes going through this. Okay, this is a response that's more of the modern period. This is coming from Rav Yaskel Abdi, from Rav Avadya Hadayah. Rav Avadya Hadayah was a dayan in the court in Yerushalayim in the modern period. I think he passed away. Yeah, this one. And it says on it, Simante, right? Yaskel Abdi. He was a dayan in the Supreme Court, the Rabbinic Supreme Court in Yerushalayim, a very outstanding scholar. He was still alive in the 60s, when I was here in Kevin Biagne, in the 60s, I wrote a response, I don't know better. Okay, now, that's, right, this tshuva you can see was written Tafshin Gimel, right? Tafshin Gimel is 1943, this tshuva was written. And, okay, Tafshin Gimel, this response is Yushalayim Yom Dalatet Nisan Tafshin Gimel. Okay? Lefara Gora Muvak, Rabbi Vadiyadaya, Chava Sefer, Rabbi Petah, at the time, I guess in 1943, it was Rabbi Petah. Avakesh bezeh lechvod godlo, shiachave. Kaf gimel is a Rashi table that usually means like going at all. Okay, shiachye lechavod data to express his opinion. Harama is elevated. Beinir Hashem b'mesibat haseder lePesach. So I'm writing a seder, Pesach seder. In Yitzur Shem Nashin Shalchot B'Pritzut B'Seyar U'B'Zvot Nugulot. The woman at the Pesach Seder walk around with her shoulders uncovered, her hair uncovered. U'Chedome. In Yotel Nachon Shem Lo Lomar HaGadah. Is it better that I should not say the HaGadah? Machamat Avi Degenever, because I'm facing women who are exposed. And rabbinically, this is considered sexually distracting. When it comes to Birkat HaMazon, that's in the like, it's not such a major problem. I know by heart, I can say with my eyes closed, and that solves that problem. I don't know by heart, I've got to look inside, he says. He doesn't want to stand there looking like this the whole time. Okay, let's have a tshuva shel mazon. Okay, tshuva. Now, we're going to start plowing through this responses, so just sort of bear with me. Hine Marana Beit Yosef, skip down to the words of Zalba, right? Hine Marana Beit Yosef Zalba Rochaim Simon Ayne, Chadav Mishem HaRashba. The Beit Yosef wrote the name of the Rashba. Upasko Ramah Sham Simon Siv Gimel Baga. And the Ramah brings it in Siv Gimel in his gloss. Vazalashon, this is what it says. Vahu Hadin, the same law, applies, that is permitted, the halacha simply said, it already just said that you can look at a woman who's paneh yadev aglea, that is, those things are normally uncovered, there's not a problem halachically. The Ramah there states, v'hu hadin asarot shel nashim, also the hair of the women, shereginin letzeh mechutz letzimtam, that normally comes out of the neck that holds their hair. The Shamba Beit Yosef, and there in the Beit Yosef, that's Rabbi Yosef Karo's commentary to the tour. Siyem HaRashba, he brings the Rashba, the Tamoshal Devo, explains the reason, why is this hair permissible? Because he's used to singing, it's not a problem, Ad Kan. V'od katak sham b'shem HaRosh, had the tefach b'ishe erva, dafka b'davar sh'ragil liyot mechuseh b'ish. B'isha. When it says an exposed tefach, it's referring to that which is normally covered. Okay? V'hu ma'asha pasak ha'tur b'shulchan aruch sham b'siv alaf ayin sham. And that's exactly what's brought in the shulchan aruch. U'puk chazi pum memale l'rav Ravan. Look, see what the great has said. Memale means to speak. B'tshuva maram al shakir simon lamanei. The maram al shakir and simon lamanei. The hair that comes out of this net, there's no problem with that hair whatsoever. Since women have always kept the custom to show it. After you discuss the Rama Shaka discusses the great length, Katab v'zelashon, he wrote, quote, "V'chol ma shetimtza b'sefer Zohar." Please remember this, because this is a very important point. "V'chol ma shekatab tinza b'sefer Zohar." Everything that you'll find in the Sefer Zohar, "Makpid al gilui seyar ha'isha," where the Zohar is very extreme in its attitude. do towards the hair of a woman's being exposed in the house, it brings all sorts of dangers to the family. Afilu de b'seyah shedarka lachasot, Eshar is possible, the b'seyah shedarka lachasotom mishtai. Says the Maharal Shachar, all that the Zohar is referring to is hair that is normally covered, but hair that is uncovered, like the piot and the hair in the back, that's perfectly all right. The Zohar was not against it. By the way, the Chatam Sofer was extreme. The Hungarian, that no hair, the custom of women shaving their hair, which you mentioned, comes from this fear of the Zohar. The Zohar says the woman's hair is a cover, bring all sorts of dangers to the house, and the Chatam Sofer is extremely machmir on this, and he says that's not so. So that's what the Zohar means. The Zohar means that the Zohar's extreme warnings is only by hair that's normally covered. Now continues the Maharal Shachar. Ubon etzaveach al elu osim oto seyah l'isha betok bita. Let us now holler against those who forbid such hair uncovering in the inner house. Ma'i de seyah b'isha elva, from the fact that uncovered hair is considered immodest. Mibli dat be'ezesam seyah amu, without knowing what seyah is referred to. So now then the Rav will skip a little bit down. So what Rav, all he says is, you see from here that Hiror is not a problem when we are used to it. Now let's look at Siv Bet. So this is Siv Bet, the bet. Okay. So what he concludes from this is, you see from the Maharal Shachar that there is a concept of regilut of what you're used to. V'chein ha'tatach hazeh le'hilchot l'achod ben ishai, to the Ben Ishai. We read from his Seder Anashim, but he wrote a book called the Ben Ishai. The Ben Ishai were sermons that he gave over a 2-year period. Half the sermon was an halacha, collection of halacha, and the other half was a gada. Okay? So, Zeh Lashono, Shana Aleph, the first year, Parshat Bo, Ot Yud Bet. Shepasak Lahachidina the Ramai brings the rule of the Ramah with the Maram of Shakar and Al, Vesim Bekatab Zel Lashona. Ubesefer HaKatan Mekabetz El, in my book Kabetz El, Heliti, I raised the Hanashim Ba'arei Europa, the women of Europe. Shedakan the left of Ruat Rosh, where the hair is normally uncovered, Mutal Likot Kinegdan, you allow to read Kriya Shema in their presence. Even the kol hanashim dakan v'chak, since all the women dress this way. Okay, now he's going to bring something even more extreme. V'sham ba'ot yud, and in the ot yud in the Ben Ishai, katab v'zeh l'shona. Isha sheminika et bena, a woman is sitting and nursing. In Arab countries, it's very common the woman actually nurse milk. It's considered not problematic. U'megaled dadea, and she reveals her breasts. Asur likot on the varech kenegda. You're not allowed to read Kriyat Shema or make a bracha in her presence. V'yesh omrim, but there are those who say, kiven de isha daka legalot tadeh manikir, v'zman hayinika. Since women normally expose their breasts when they are nursing, harei hadadim nechshavim oto zman, at that moment, when she's nursing, kapot kapot ayadayim vapanim. It is considered not such a distractive yesh lismuch al svara zo b'shadavcha. Okay, so that's pretty extreme.
At a wedding last night, a Kalabach wedding, woman was sitting there nursing the
chuppah. She loves the turkey. That was really very facetious and improper. I apologize for the take. The post can deal with this problem. It was very common in Arab countries for women to do it. The Arab women did it. It was considered very natural. It was considered. There was a move on, to be honest, since I came to Israel, I haven't seen anything of that sort. I remember when I was in the States, still in the early 70s, I was in several instances where women were nursing in public, American women nursing in public. I understand that that has ceased, but there was a lot of discussion about what? Yeah, that, I'm not saying that the women didn't cover themselves. And my wife nursed the children. They find all sorts of interesting ways to cover yourself in an airplane when you're flying, you know, transatlantic with kids and all of the bits of the situation and what I'm referring to. Some vulnerable periods in the bathroom. I mean, all sorts of washroom doing. But yes, there are ways of doing modesty. I'm talking about exposing yourself and not considering it a major problem. You know, just picking up the blouse and opening the blouse and nursing. I was at a student party in the States where a woman went and did it, and I felt very uncomfortable. But it was considered, nobody flinched. I did. Anyway, those are interesting student days. Okay, but the Post can discuss this particular point, and they make it very clear that in the modern period, this is not acceptable. The Post don't really go ahead and seem to discuss whether it's permissible or not. It was done. The women clearly did it in the Arab countries. There's no question.
Relative goes two directions, which is fair.
Right, but if you hold an absolute score, see what's ironic in the whole thing is that this is the Beni Shai, right? He's in an Arab country, and yet, you know, he didn't come down and say that she shouldn't do what is she doing such a thing. Unless he's referring to his wife and for her husband's presence and that maybe, but I don't think that's not our...
No, it's just relative goes, maybe it's that. Again, you know, they kept their faces veiled, but...
Okay, so that's it. Let's just continue and we'll call it. Let me just finish the paragraph. Al-Kain, harei lecham zu'ah. There you see it's clear, you'll say, kamosha katavnu, ume... Ketavnu that there is such a concept of relative quality. Umiatam uvuad davar deshaper yesh desmoch smicha ma'alya al divrei ha'matirim ha'nizkarim that there is a great room to rely on those who are lenient. De'en l'chashat etchak yoter mizeh de'i efshar lo latzon enough that when he can't close his eyes and read the Haggadah but don't matter about Haggadah should be Shom Pesach the einah shgura b'fiv, because that's not common people's mouth. Ubevadai the ein lo levatel mitzvah d'oraita shvigadita. One shouldn't fulfill the mitzvah of vigadit l'vincha. V'lachush l'divrei ha'machmirot to be stringent according to the strict school. Mikom makom hachacham einah b'rosho l'dat eich l'tneig b'zeh l'tzeli tzak panav. He should turn his face a little bit. Boven shelo yeh k'neged anashim alalu. He should not be facing the women directly. I told you. The same problem comes up with the rabbi's Masada Kedushin. That's the other variation on the theme. Watch the rabbi, what he does, and how he turns. I recently was on such a wedding.
But if they're reading from what they're supposed to be reading, from the sitter or from whatever, where are their eyes supposed to be?
Women start asking questions. There's a discussion that goes on. I mean, you're right. He says, you have to do it with chokhmah. It's not true. ואם מכיר בעצמו שדבריו יהיו נשמעים, אם יגיד לנשים לחסות ראשם וזרועותיהם, he's smart, he's a piece of the woman who listen, tells them to cover their hair and their arms, בשעת אגדה ודאי תבוא עליו ברכה. זה שברכה. Okay, we're going to stop here. We'll continue reading a selection, we're not going to go through the whole tshuva, we're reading selections of the tshuva, because there are a lot of things that we can learn. According to the relative school, who sets the pace? I mean, do we go by non-Jewish women? I mean, do the men, this Rigilut school, do they go by the non-Jewish women? By the way, it's very, he's of the opinion, by the way. He will clearly set up, by the way, that there are two schools. He will, as you go through this tshuva, you'll see a strict school, an extreme non-skilled, the relative school, and he's sort of the school in between that maintains that you can rely on this school, b'shadat the abad, if you have no choice, to say regilu el. But in going through it, he discusses some of the responses that we saw to say there really is such that these two shitot really do exist.
What's accepted
today
that a woman can have her back
to
back with her head exposed and slide
to the right? Well, we'll see. Okay, I suggest that you wait till we see Reb Moshe Feinstein. The answer is that the hair, if she has like a net behind her hair and the hair comes out the back and like everybody would seem to, everybody. And of course, there's a lot more room. But you'll see that based on Moshe Feinstein, the women actually show much more in the front or show hair in the back. A tefach in the front. We'll go through the tshuva of Moshe, because Moshe is a very interesting in between position, which allows a certain amount of kudot to discuss. Yeah. I must tell you that well, we'll discuss it next week. I just want to tell you now that next week we'll meet. In 2 weeks I have a wedding with somebody very close, which I won't be able to attend. So, but next week we'll be here. Okay,